Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King, and we are joined live by Merle Kelch, not in the studio, but on location at the palatial Kelch Estate in northern Wisconsin. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Tom. And again, folks, we have to say that the palatial estate means it's a trailer in the woods.
Right.
And a very cold trailer this morning, I might add, with considerably blowing winds up here. Holy cow.
Yeah, down here as well. The weather is crummy, so I would imagine many folks are staying inside this morning. Grab another cup of coffee and give us your financial questions at 715-845-2155. That's why we are here. That's why at least Merle is here, because you certainly don't want to take financial advice from me.
Well, you got this. You know, Tom, I have to admit, I was chatting with some folks last night, and they said, well, tell me about Tom King and doing a radio program with him. I said, it's actually fantastic. I said, when we first started out, he didn't know what questions to ask, and now he's really got this. Pretty soon he's going to become a conservative.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, there's no need to insult me that early in the morning. Come on. But let's talk a little bit about a tough couple of days for the market. Stocks took a hit 2 days in a row and have dropped below the 1800 mark, at least the S&P 500.
Yeah.
For the first time since December 17th.
Yep.
I guess talk about what was driving that and what you think it all means.
You know, one of the things that happened here is we had talked about, you know, the bubble, is the market going to come down, is it going to correct? And the answer has been yes, it's going to. You know, just simply because that's what the market does. The market goes up and corrects, it comes back again, it goes back up. We saw the same thing happen back in August of this past year in 2013. You know, the market came back down, came down some 4.5%, near 5% at that particular point in time. Of course, it came back then in September. But we have to remember that the stock market trades within a range. You know, it goes up and down within that range. But that range has got to continue to keep moving forward, and it's going to do that based upon what's happening from the economic data and the economy itself. The economy really is doing okay. I'm not saying good, I'm not saying great, but it's doing okay, and it continues to keep moving forward. And with that, you know, the stuff that's happening inside of the marketplace right now is going to go down, but certainly every belief from everybody on CNBC is that the market is going to come back, something that's just kind of letting the air out of the tire, giving people a chance to take some profits, move out and move forward. So as we're looking at this, we in our office have just been exceptionally busy in the last 2 days. In fact, yesterday was supposed to be a half day for me, and that turned out to be not a half day but a full day, because so busy, and not only buying for clients, but clients calling in and saying, hey, the market's down, let's get some money in and put some money inside of the marketplace. So it's just an enormously busy day.
One of the things they suggested was a reason for this is that the China manufacturing slowdown is having an effect across the board. I guess talk a little bit about how that affects not only international stocks, the Asian situation, but here in the United States as well.
Well, not only from the China standpoint, another part that happened was emerging markets currencies having a big drop in price. So those two things kind of said, well, maybe we're going to take some profit off. You know, we take a look at what happened on Thursday, the market, of course, down, and then we look at the over the Asian marketplace overnight. Japan down 2%. China was down. We then came to Europe, and they were down too. So I think it was only inevitable that we're going to be down in the U.S. I didn't think we were going to be down quite as much as we were, but I'm happy about that. You know, China, and one of the parts of that is that, you know, China is not only a trading partner with the U.S., but it's a trading partner with the world. And if they slow down, their goods and services aren't going to be purchased around the world. And believe it or not, China continues to keep buying more and more products around the world. Just for an example, Tom, and everybody listening, China now has more vehicles than we do in America, as far as the number of vehicles that it buys and has inside of its country. So with that, they're buying a lot of them from American companies. So if they're slowing down, less vehicles, so people kind of look at it, if they slow down, it's going to have a little bit of a slowing effect around the globe. I don't know how much. We still continue to grow here inside of the U.S., but that was enough to just simply say, well, let's take some profits off the table from the marketplace.
Investment analyst Drew Wilson suggested that investors last year, one of the things they weren't really concerned about to a great extent were earnings, and he suggested that the markets gave corporations an amnesty on earnings last year, but
yep.
This year, he says that corporations need to prove their profits are sustainable before being rewarded. We've talked on this program a lot about how you believe that making a profit and earnings are a very important part of any equation you're looking at.
Well, you have to make a profit. If you don't make money, how are you going to do anything? We've talked about it, and we joked about this and on this program and so forth, and talking about the new economy versus the old economy was the big term back in the late 90s. And the new economy says, well, this for stuff they're going to do in the future. You know what? I think that ship has sailed. There's no what's going on in the future. It simply is, what are you doing now? What are you making? You're making some money. Are you going forward? And that's a big part of the marketplace and what's going on. If you're not making money, there's going to be an issue. So we take a look at the number of companies that have not only made their profit, but made their profit within what the analysts had said. The numbers are about what they normally are, and there really isn't any surprises coming up that one company's having a terrible year, and well, all companies are having a terrible year or a good year, depending on what company it is. But the percentage of companies, which is usually about 70 to 78% of companies on the S&P 500, are hitting or exceeding their numbers. And that same percentage is coming in, even what's happening now. So that being the case, yes, the companies now have to hit the numbers. And it's happening. So the unfortunate part about this is we're looking at what's happening with the marketplace right now, thinking that the whole world's falling apart, and that's not the case. But one thing I do have to talk about is this. You know, we talk about diversification in the marketplace, what's going on in the portfolio. And with the economy being okay and with the marketplace over the course of the last 2 years, Tom, people have forgotten about diversification. And we have to make sure that we're doing that so that when we see things like this in the marketplace, it's not killing us as bad as we might think. Now, I want to chat about some folks that just came in this past week. We have some folks that came in this past week, and we have them diversified so they have a traditional type of a brokerage account. We have them using some variable annuities in another part. And the blend between those two portfolios, you know, having a real nice rate of return. But obviously, a variable annuity on the inside, we have guarantees, and we have a lot of bonds on the inside and guaranteed types of portfolios. So the rate of return versus the brokerage account, the difference is probably about 5 or 6%. And the conversation was, well, we don't want to use variable annuities anymore because we just want to go into the brokerage account because that makes a lot better rate of return. And so the conversation was is that we use the annuities because it has a lot more things inside of it. It has some teeth as far as, you know, guarantees and that type of stuff. And just talking about general diversification. And I had to go back and readdress that. I said, because sometimes the market does drop down. By the way, I was seeing them on Thursday morning. And so then yesterday happened. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking on Monday saying, remember, this is the reason we do this. We have to remember that we're diversified, and we can't get excited with the rates of returns and chase rates of returns, which is the term that's used. And as soon as we start chasing the rate of returns, we end up getting caught behind the eight ball, and we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot when we have days like yesterday and Thursday. And very well could end up having a day like this on Monday, too. At least a lot of the futures are pointing that we're going to have a down day on Monday. I don't know if it's going to be quite as bad as it was yesterday, but we could very well have a down day on Monday as well.
Now, obviously, when the market goes down, that doesn't mean every stock in the market goes down, and there were some that that had decent days, including Kimberly-Clark. They announced fourth-quarter earnings jumped to $539 million, or $1.40 per share, beating analyst expectations. You know, the paper industry has been taking a lot of hits recently, but Kimberly-Clark apparently doing well.
They are. A number of companies that have also done the same thing, doing well, making some money. Kimberly-Clark certainly won. Procter & Gamble has done pretty well, beating estimates, as well as a new company, Care.com, came out as a non-medical care management company. But it sold at $17, higher than what they originally said it was going to be from its initial public offering. Microsoft, which really hasn't done a ton over a long period of time, up 2.8% yesterday. So it was up 2.1%, even though the marketplace went crazy. Even Starbucks had a tremendous year and day, up 2.2%, selling some stuff. So we see these companies doing well, and there's profit that are out there. So the marketplace that happened, in my opinion, just a little bit of profit. The pin broke a little bit. People are taking some money off the table. You know, people said, what do we do in this type of a marketplace? Well, you know, I can tell you what we're doing, and I'm not suggesting that anybody out there listening run out and do this for themselves, but what we're doing inside of our office is we're leaving things as they sit. But the cash that we've been holding on to for a little bit, waiting for the market to slow down, we started putting it in and started investing heavily inside of the marketplace because the economy is still moving forward. All indications that are moving it forward, so as a result of that, we are now getting that cash in the marketplace. And there's a ton of cash out there, Tom. You know, it was just simply said on CNBC yesterday that there's as much as $6 trillion in cash waiting to go into the marketplace. And when that money starts going to the marketplace, it has the ability to force the market up considerably and quickly, and it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing that happen over the course of the next week or so.
Now, that's institutional money, or that's just regular mutual funds and you know, average investor money?
Institutional and a lot of corporate cash that's out there. You know, we hear Carl Icahn trying to get Apple, for example, to unleash some of its cash and let some of that loose because Apple has so much cash. But that type of cash has the ability to really affect the marketplace in the sense that Apple could go in and buy additional shares of its own stock. It could go in and start buying up some smaller companies. It could increase and give some dividends that individuals like you and I, Tom, starting to say, let's get some money back to the marketplace because now it's on sale, and I think that's going to come.
715-845-2155, even though Merle is on location today, we can still take your questions. The magic of conference calling. Give us a call here this morning, 715-845-2155. We'll be right back here on WSAU.
Demi Lovato.
And I'm Joe Jonas.
There's so much in the world to celebrate. The movies have their night to honor the best of film.
The finest athletes compete for the podium.
Musicians have their time to shine. But how do we honor the kids who are making a difference?
With We Day, filling stadiums around the world to celebrate the good that young people do.
Follow We Day on Twitter and Facebook.
With each follow, school supplies will be given to a child overseas.
We Day.
Join the movement.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. My student loan is totally paid off.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. I paid more than the minimum each month, and soon enough, it was gone.
So you're just giving up?
Giving up on what?
The life of luxury. Egyptian cotton, caviar Thursdays, designer everything.
What are you talking about?
Our plan. What happened to winning the lottery and mastering the art of the perfect mimosa? Hosting galas, wearing enough jewelry to require a bodyguard, vacationing in the French Riviera and then buying it.
I just thought maybe it was time to prepare for my future. You know, set some financial goals, make some smart investments, open a 401k.
Financial goals? Investments? A 401k? You are horrifying right now. Listen, if winning the lottery were easy, everyone would do it.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, doctor, I won't stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Honey, get up. You're going to miss the bus.
There's no school today.
Nice try, Buster, but get your butt in gear.
Get the latest on school closings as soon as they're announced.
Seriously, there's, like, no school today.
Online on WSAU and WSAU.com.
I checked their website, sweetie. There is school today.
Much to the chagrin of kids everywhere.
Oh, stupid radio station. Move it!
WSAU.
And we're back here. I'm in the studio, Merle Kelch on location, but we are here to take your financial questions, 715-845-2155. We mentioned earlier that part of the market drop yesterday was emerging markets and emerging market currencies, and I guess talk a little bit about that and whether or not the average investor should even be messing around with that stuff.
You know, we talk about it all the time, and you see the commercials on TV about, this very attractive English gal saying, oh, invest in currency. Well, okay, so that was my English accent, so not so much. But anyway, we look at a currency trade. We can make some money in currency trade if you know what you're doing. The unfortunate part is Tom, 99.8% of us don't know, and maybe even 99.9%. I haven't measured it in a while. Okay, I haven't measured it all, I'm guessing. But we don't know how to do currency trade or what's called carry trade. But what has happened is that this past week, the actual treasury interest rates, or the interest rates on treasuries for the U.S. have actually dropped. And believe it or not, in this whole time that we're hearing about interest rates are going to go up because of tapering, et cetera, we actually saw the interest rates come down on the treasuries. And as a result of that, it basically crushed the currencies going around our world. So the smaller trades or the emerging market trade currencies just really took it on the chin. So with that, then, you have mutual funds and investments in what's called an ADR, an American Depository Receipt, which are stocks and foreign companies traded in the U.S. They all just really kind of took it on the chin to a certain degree, coupled with China. They all had to do a revaluation based upon that lower currency when they bring it back to U.S. standards. And that really had an effect on the marketplace that the marketplace didn't like that, and really one of the things. So, you know, in here, currency trade is just really difficult. You have to know what you're doing. But the major effect is because they had meaning, you know, mutual funds, stocks, et cetera, that trade in these foreign currencies. Now, they eventually have to bring it back, especially with mutual funds. They have to bring it back to U.S. dollars. And in doing so, they took a hit as far as value goes, and having to do that when that currency dropped down in value. That's one of the bigger concerns that have happened, and really largely because the economy continues to keep growing in the U.S. and the interest rates on the treasuries actually dropped.
715-845-2155, the number to call here. There's a column in MarketWatch today, and it's called When to Retire, Three Steps, Three Contingencies. And it's things we talk about a lot on the program, but it's always good to revisit them every once in a while for new listeners and things like that.
Sure.
But it talks about how to start creating your basic retirement plan, then project it forward to include your three key retirement age options, 62, 66, and 70.
Yep.
Talk about the differences of those three ages and what it means to retire at one of those ages and the pros and cons.
You know, Tom, I don't have the article sitting in front of me, but nonetheless, you know, the interesting thing is when we do classes, we'll tell people, if we just simply pick one of your financial plans, we look at it in the class, and we say, if we take one of your written financial plans and we simply adjust it to everybody else's income, what you want to do for retirement, we'd all do pretty well. And at that particular point in time, you kind of get the deer in the headlights look, because people go around and say, written financial what? You know, a written financial plan might be something you put on a yellow sheet of paper, but like anything else, if you write the plan down or you write your goals down, your chances of achieving them go up dramatically. And so, you know, we set up a financial plan. We set up a retirement goal. We set up the stuff into the future, and we start moving forward with it. So that played the way then we have the ability to say, well, what's going to happen at 62? What's going to happen at 65? What's going to happen at 66? Here's one of the things that I like to do in my office when I see people. They'll say, well, we're not going to retire until 70. I said, well, let's plan on 62. And they said, well, why is that? I said, because your body might retire before you do. And with that being the case, maybe a disability or health or something that happens. So let's make sure that we have the ability to retire at 62 or maybe 65. And so if you want to continue to keep working until 70 or 75, should you choose, you have that ability. But if you can't anymore, we at least have that portfolio set up or your income and your dollars set up so that you can stop and you can retire when you need to, in that instance, rather than when you want to. So we want to make sure that we have stuff ready to go for 62. Now, a big thing that happens with 62 to 65 versus 70 is Social Security. It's a question we hear on a continual basis. We hear it pretty much on a weekly basis. And that is, should I take my Social Security at 62 or should I take it at 65 or 66 or 67, depending upon your ages when you hit the full Social Security? Should I just simply wait until 70 and do it at that particular point in time? And there's really no right or wrong answer in this other than, when do you plan on stopping working? Obviously, if you're going to work, folks, from 62 to 65, if you're going to work during that period of time, don't collect Social Security. And the reason I say that is because you will lose a dollar Social Security for every two that you earn over and above about $13,000, $14,000 right now. That's a floating number at the moment, but it's right in that neighborhood. So we're going to lose Social Security if you work past that. So obviously, if you're going to work, unless it's within that dollar range or that salary range, don't do it because you're going to lose Social Security. But once you start drawing from it, is it better to do it from 62 to 66? Well, if we look at the numbers, and we've done this calculation with, and it really hasn't changed a bunch. It used to be that if we started collecting at 62 versus collecting at age 65, when that was the normal retirement age for everybody at 65, you would have to be alive for 12 years. And if you lived past 12 years, past 65, going up to age 77, if you live longer than 77, the advantage of collecting early was then to Social Security. But if something happened and you passed away before 77, you got more money in your hand because of all the money that you would have collected for that 3 years versus not. Now, that being the case, the question is that, well, geez, who can guarantee you're going to live past 77? Well, really, nobody. The other part of that is simply that at 77, Tom, are you going to be traveling the world? Maybe not.
Probably not.
But a lot of people say, well, let's get some of that more you know, get more travel done and retire a little bit earlier so we can do more things prior to 77, 80 years old, where we may slow down and start to you know, hang around the house a little bit more and spend a little bit of time with the family versus becoming world travelers, Tom, as I know you are.
All right, I want to revisit this in a little bit, but let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Carol.
Carol, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. Could you explain how you can move a Roth from one institution to another?
Okay.
Is that possible?
When you talk institution, do you mean investment company?
Yes. Well, actually from a bank to an investment company.
Okay. Real simple to do. Now, I like to pick up my friends at the banks at this particular point in time because sometimes they think it's their money. Carol, it's real simple to do to move money from one Roth IRA to another Roth IRA or IRA to IRA. You just have to make sure you follow a couple of rules first. Generally, when you move from company A to company B, you usually have to set up the account with company B first, and then you use company B to go over and pick the money up from company A. And in doing that, company B will send what's called a letter of acceptance over to company A saying, we understand this client wants to move the money. We understand that you have it. We'll accept the money. Here's the account number, et cetera, to move the money over. In doing that, it becomes a transfer of assets. You don't take what's called constructive receipt of the money, and there's no taxable event as a result of doing so. So it happens all the time. With exception of sometimes at a bank, the bank is just a little bit different type of an animal, and the bank doesn't like to play by those rules all the time, so sometimes you have to do a little extra work with the bank. Now, it is completely acceptable to go to the bank and say, give me the check for my IRA or Roth IRA, and they'll give you the check. A lot of times they'll say, well, we're going to withhold 20%, and you know what? They're not supposed to do that, but some of them are adamant. But now once you have that check in your hand, it's taxable unless you get it into an IRA or a Roth IRA within 60 days. So banks sometimes are a little bit different animal than the rest of the investment world, and that's what I jokingly say, that sometimes they think it's their money.
You said they're going to withhold 20%. Are they considering that a penalty or what?
Well, you know, the rules are from 1997 on is that if you take money out of an IRA or a 401k, if they don't know where it's going to go to, that it's not going to be a transfer, an identified transfer, that institution needs to withhold 20% of tax.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
And so if you just simply go to your 401k, for example, Carol and Tom, if you go there and simply say, well, just give me the money, they'll automatically withhold 20% of your 401k. A lot of times banks, and for one reason or another, smaller banks, stretch that into, if you're moving your money from your IRA out of the bank CDs, they're moving into another IRA, they stretch that type of that rule into saying we're going to withhold 20% as well. And it's really not right. They're not supposed to do that, but some people are adamant about that. So my recommendation is, again, you open up the IRA with company B, you set it up to work with company A, and what I found to work best if you're going to use a bank, for example, is you find the home office of the bank, the corporate office. You tend to do better than if you're trying to do something with a local branch.
Okay.
All right.
Help
great.
Out.
All right. All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Carol. 715-845-2155. We're going to take a break for some news. We'll come back with more. Merle Kelch, Making Financial Sense on the way here on Fox on WSAU.
Child home safely.
Tap your heels together 3 times.
It's just a click away.
There is no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Authorities in South Carolina have a suspect in custody for the shooting death of a student at South Carolina State University. A news release says that 19-year-old Justin Singleton has been arrested in Orangeburg for the murder of 20-year-old Brandon Robinson. It was an emotional day in court for the family and friends of Marlise Munoz. They broke into tears after a Texas judge cleared the way yesterday to remove the brain-dead pregnant woman from life support.
The family of Munoz has been trying to get her off life support since Thanksgiving, but doctors had refused, citing a state law that requires life-sustaining treatment for a pregnant patient. The judge ruled the law doesn't apply in this case because the woman is already deceased. A La Crosse man has been charged with first-degree reckless homicide for allegedly supplying the heroin that killed a Clark County woman. 27-year-old Reven Taylor is already in the La Crosse County Jail on other charges. Clark County prosecutors filed the new charge after an autopsy ruled 19-year-old Monica Cooper of rural Neillsville died of an overdose, and the drug was traced to Taylor. Cooper died December 17th of 2012. In sports, the Bucks lost to Cleveland last night on the road. They're back in action tonight at home against Atlanta. The Badger men's basketball team takes on Purdue this afternoon. You can hear that game right here, pregame show at 3 o'clock. Badger hockey again tonight as they face Ohio State. They beat the Buckeyes last night. The Badger women's hockey team in action today as well, taking on Minnesota Duluth. It's going to be a cold one, as the Newsline 9 weather forecast tells us. Partly sunny, cold and breezy with a high of just 2 above. For tonight, a low going down to 2 below. And then tomorrow, snow, 2 to 4 inches possible again. Windy as well, a high of 8 above with an overnight low Sunday to Monday of 11 below zero. Monday, look for partly cloudy, dangerously cold, a high of just 9 below. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
When you were a little kid and you thought about what you wanted to be, teaching was at the top of your list. But things changed. And as you got older, teaching didn't seem like the best option anymore. So you're thinking you'll be something else. But what would your 12-year-old self say? Now you want to be a doctor. You don't think teachers save lives? 25 at a time. An actress? Try playing a different role every time the bell rings. How about a scientist? Ever heard of physics? Chemistry? Who do you think teaches that? Teachers today are breaking down obstacles, finding innovative ways to instill old lessons, and taking learning far beyond the four walls of the classroom. It's time to recognize that great things are happening in teaching and put it back on your list. Don't try to convince yourself otherwise. You had it right the first time.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
It is insecure, absolutely 100%. People from HHS have said that.
They deny the existence of security problems and shortcomings and lack of security testing.
Scaring people away from healthcare.gov website.
News updates at the top and bottom of the hour.
It is insecure.
You know, it's not a question of whether or not it's insecure. It's what we need to do to fix it.
Then stick around and talk about it.
No way.
I don't trust them with my info. I'm not signing up until it's fixed.
News Talk, WSAU.
And we're back here. I'm in the studio. Merle's on location, but we can take your questions and your financial phone call. 715-845-2155. We're talking about steps to take and decisions to make as you near retirement age. And the second one they talk about is the Social Security benefit calculation. And this columnist is continually surprised by how many people that don't do a study of their Social Security benefit, how much it's going to be, when it's going to start, and things like that. And they listen and get questions answered by, you know, Uncle Joe or their brother-in-law or the guy down the street as to how Social Security works and will work for them. And the suggestion being that you need to do some research before all of this stuff happens.
You bet. You know, I tell you what, folks. I actually had to go to the Social Security office. I'm a payee. I have a disabled brother. And so I had to go there and do a little bit of work for my brother. And I said, by the way, what does my Social Security look like? And so I had him pop it up. And he said, well, you didn't work for 2001. I said, well, I did work in 2001. But you know, they found that, and for one reason or another, the Social Security Administration thinks that I didn't work in 2001, much to the surprise of my checkbook and my wife at the time. I actually did work in 2001. So, you know, so that sort of stuff happens, and it makes sense to take a look at your Social Security and make sure that they not only have all the years that you've worked, but look at the numbers and make sure that the incomes that they said were correct. You know, for example, when I was back in college, it actually, you know, shows that I made, you know, $3,000 for the year. It was a great year, you know. But you know, we have that. We have to make sure that those numbers are correct. Not only that, but usually around your birthday, about a month or so, 6 weeks before your birthday, you usually get a Social Security or a note that comes from Social Security showing you what your numbers are going to be. And that number is going to be if you continue to keep working as you are. Now, there's a certain amount that you've already made, but with that, then
the suggestion in this article is, though, that that number is an estimate, and you should not use that as a hard and fast number.
Exactly.
That, because they say it's about this much.
Right. It's always a little bit different when it gets calculated. One is, let's say we take a look at the number and it says this is what your income is going to be at 62, but you stop working at age 60. There's a certain amount of credit that you've already achieved for age 60 that can be taken away, but remember that's an estimate if you continue to keep working in the same direction that you are now. It also factors in there any sort of raises or increases or difference of calculation as it might be for Social Security, but it's an estimate that will get you in that neighborhood of where you're going to be. But Social Security should always be looked at. And take a look at what your number is. Surprisingly, we have a lot of people, when they come into our office, we start looking at information, planning, income, and they have no idea what their Social Security is going to be. So, fortunately, you get pretty good at estimating it, but you always have to go back and get the information from Social Security. Now, I have to say this for WASA. Hats off to the WASA Social Security Administration, because they are fantastic in that office. I have to work with them quite a bit, and I think they're just a class act and a great office, some great people to work with the Social Security Administration of WASA. I recommend them highly. Just give them a call. Set up an appointment. It's as easy as pie to go in there, sit down and chat with them. They know what they're doing. They get the stuff done, and they're incredibly helpful. So hats off.
A government agency that works well?
And I'm saying I like them. Isn't that fantastic? You know, you will rarely hear me say that,
yeah.
but I think they work out fantastic. Folks, let me make sure I say this. The opinions voiced on this show are for general information only, not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities and investment advisory services offered through HBEC Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. HBEC Incorporated and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies, and folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
The third step in this column for preparing for retirement is the corralling of your investments, and I guess what they mean by that is to start getting a little bit more conservative, know where your money is coming from and where it will be going forward, and they suggest that you be very conservative in your projections in case there are market adjustments and things like that. What's a good age if, say, someone has decided they're 5, 6, 7 years out from retirement? Is that a good age to start rejiggering your portfolio into a more conservative one?
Well, I think a portfolio when you're 50, 55 is not going to be a lot different than when you're 60 or 65. And the reason is because if we have an attained age of husband and wife at age 61, there's more than an 85%, 84% probability that one of us are still going to be alive by age 90. So even though we retire and stop working, our money has to continue to keep going. And there's not a lot of difference. We still want to get the best rate of return for the least amount of risk we can. So what we find is as we go on during retirement years, we start adding more fixed or bond-type investment vehicles inside of it, just to start offsetting the volatility and the risk. The additional parts we start to do is to try to add some guarantees to portfolios, which didn't really exist inside of portfolios prior to 2006 and the equity side of things of the stock market. And since then, now we have the ability to put some guarantees to investments and still in the stock market. But the guarantees to investments, let me make sure I preface this and I say this properly. When I'm saying guaranteed investment, it's not a guarantee from a rate of return standpoint. It's a guarantee from an income standpoint, primarily through the use of variable annuities. Again, consult your financial advisor, et cetera, and doing stuff. But we have the ability to do that. We start taking a look at putting guarantees to our portfolio in the form of municipal bonds, where we can buy the insured municipal bonds for interest and principal. But these are the types of things we start looking at as we come up in retirement years. You know, so when do we start doing that? Well, as soon as we start investing, we have to start collecting and putting our monies together and our assets and so forth. You know, we have some folks that we're working with right now, and this always happens, Tom. You start working with some folks, and there's this always that one set of people that they've worked hard, they've saved hard, but they've worked and they've saved hard in so many little places that it adds up to a lot, but it's just a lot of little places. And so then you have to get it all combined together so it actually starts working right and working cohesively. And they'll go through and say, well, geez, well, that's right, we have a little bit over here. Well, we have some more in this bank. Remember, we have that at one account over here in this bank. Oh, remember, we have this annuity that we purchased when we were younger that's still there that has a little bit of money. That's the stuff you got to start getting collected. That's the stuff that drives everybody crazy, especially in our world, because not that it's so much work. Well, okay, it really is a lot of work. But you have to try to get it all put that together and working together versus having all these little bitty parts all over the place. And so once you have that done, you still want to have a portfolio that's got the best rate of return, least amount of risk, and as we talked about earlier in the program, make sure it's diversified so we can help
715-845-2155. That'll be a call if you have a question for Merle. You know, obviously in today's society, today's economy, people are not working at the same job for 30 or 40 years like they might have done decades ago.
Right.
Yeah. And so one of the decisions that people will have to reach at some point is what to do with their 401k from one job when they leave for another. And the question was asked, is it best to leave your 401k account with an ex-employer or do you transfer it to an IRA? The pros and cons of doing that and how you go about making that kind of decision.
Yeah, a decision that we run into every week is exactly that, and questions we have to help us answer with people. And the thing with that is that, you know, the old 401k, they being the old employer, have to leave it there until 62 by law. So if you want to keep it there until they're 62, they have to keep it there. Afterwards, they have the ability to say, well, we want you to take the money. If it's $5,000 or less, they have the ability to simply send you the money, withhold that 20% we talked about before ahead of time, but then they just simply ship you the money so that can also be done. I'm not a big fan of keeping money inside of a 401k or rolling the old 401k and put it into the new 401k. So there might be some benefits from an expense standpoint as far as where you go with the investments moving from the old to the new. But what happens is that you look at it, the old 401k might have, let's say, a dozen or maybe it's a tremendous fund and it's got two dozen different investments out of the old 401k. Maybe the new one's got a dozen or two dozen investments in as well. But Tom, we look at it, how many in the open marketplace that we can invest in? Well, the investments seem to be endless. There are hundreds of thousands of choices if we take a look at all the stocks and bonds and mutual funds that are out there. So with it, we then ask ourselves the question, where do we think we have the ability to have the best opportunity or the best choice when it comes to different sectors, different types of funds, different types of diversification? Where do we have the best, inside the 401k with a dozen or two dozen funds or the open marketplace with endless numbers? Well, I think we have more opportunity out there. So more opportunity would tend to tell us that we potentially have the ability for a higher rate of return. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but we have the ability to have places to move and to adjust based on what happens with the economy and the marketplace. So I think the big pro in moving the money into a brokerage account or multiple different types of investments versus keeping inside of the existing 401k. Now, the benefit of keeping inside the existing 401k is you don't have any expenses or fees, and you probably don't have to really think about it much. And same thing if you move it from the old 401k into the new one. So the benefit would certainly be from a fee standpoint. But the fees, you can save a few shekels from fees, but you may miss many shekels by not having full diversification and full ability to use whatever is going on inside the marketplace.
715-845-2155. Also, they say that with an IRA, it's easier to use customized beneficiary designations. So many 401ks won't accept them.
It's very true. And by the way, folks, Tom and I, our names are available for beneficiary designation.
You say that every time, and nobody's done it yet.
It hasn't happened in how many years we've been doing this
sort
of thing?
That's a long
2001,
time, yeah.
13 years, and nobody's, not one beneficiary designation.
Yeah,
folks,
that we know of anyway, yeah.
Please help us. We are starving students.
715-845-2155. What else has been on your radar? What do you have clients coming in and talking to you about that's concerning them as we go forward into the new year?
You know, Tom, a couple of things that we've had over the course of the last few days because of the marketplaces. Is there a panic going on? And that's a big question coming up in diversification as we jumped into, but let me touch upon them again. I wanted to make sure I'm doing two different things in my notes here. Let me stop back for one, answer the second question. First question first, and, well, you get my point in a second. If we take a look at the beneficiary designations, it's important that new IRAs have the ability to have customized beneficiary designations. And the reason I say this is that there are new trust types of documents that are out there right now that have just really wild beneficiaries and that kind of stuff to it. And 401ks don't allow us to do that, and sometimes we have to go to the new IRAs for example, some of the marital income trusts and different types of IRAs that are out there. Now, in saying that, I want to warn people that are out there, and I want to talk to my attorney friends who are listening too, is that you have to watch out because some investments have different types of guarantees attached to them, even though they're IRAs, and those guarantees goof up if you change the beneficiary to, say, a trust versus an individual, and you have to know what the ramifications are going to be for that guarantee. I wanted to make sure I said upon that. Because it's important to note, so I just want to touch upon that. The big thing that's been coming in our office is saying, is there a panic, coming back to your second question, is there a panic going on in the marketplace? And we just don't see that. We don't see anything going crazy. In fact, the terms that were coming around with Art Cashin and other people inside of CNBC yesterday and people working in the marketplace, saying it was very orderly yesterday. People were just simply selling and or buying. But there really wasn't a panic going on by any means, and I want to make sure we say that. And finally, diversification, diversification, diversification. If you were panicking yesterday, my guesstimation is your portfolio wasn't diversified, or somebody didn't discuss with you that you had diversification. Because we look at it, what happened in the marketplace yesterday should have only represented a part of your portfolio. The other parts of your portfolio have been diversified in other investments that had little or minimal effect of what was happening inside of the U.S. marketplace as of yesterday. That's the big one, diversification, diversification, diversification. Especially as you saw the marketplace go up the last few years, everybody gets excited about the part that's going up, and they stop. People stop thinking or remembering why it is that we want to shield some of the risk. We only have to look back to 2008 to remember that it still happens, and, of course, the last few days as well.
715-845-2155. We need your questions. Give us a call here. We'll take a quick break, come back with more Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch after this on WSAU.
Hi, I'm John Greenhut, the CEO of Paraswabs. If your New Year's resolution is to look great and make people's heads turn, start by getting rid of those yellow, stained teeth. The solution to a movie star white smile is the 5-Minute Paraswabs Whitening System. In 5 minutes, you'll see an average of 2 shades whiter teeth. Call now and you can try it risk-free. 1-800-975-8323. 1-800-975-8323. 1-800-975-8323.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only
the State of the Union is strong.
Well, no, let's see.
Good.
No.
The State of the Union.
State of our union.
Hey, Obama. Getting ready for the big speech, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, how about most excellent, dude?
Very funny, Bill. What, have you been to Colorado?
And Washington.
Bring your munchies and a radio.
All right, let's see. The State of our union is...
smoking.
The good old days.
On WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, Merle Kelch on location, but the phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. You know, I've talked on the show before, and I've asked you the obvious question. Why wouldn't most investors just follow the lead of every successful investor out there? Just look at what guys like Warren Buffett and, you know, some of Carl Icahn and some of these heavy hitters watch what they do and do what they do, maybe on a smaller scale, but sure. Invest in the same directions that they do. I'm looking at a pie chart right now from Tiger 21, which is a members-only club of entrepreneurs, executives, money managers, and other high-net-worth types. Their typical investment portfolio at the end of 2013 looked like this. 23% stocks, 21% private equity, 21% real estate, 14% bonds and fixed income, 8% hedge funds, 1% commodities, and 11% cash. Little change from a year earlier, but they suggest there's been a significant shift among the wealthy toward private equity and away from fixed income since mid-2011. Private equity now sits just below its highest point in 5 years, while fixed income enthusiasm is at near record lows. Tell me why everybody shouldn't just go out and follow this lead and move money accordingly.
Well, you know, one of the difficult parts is the private equity is difficult for the individual investor to start getting into. For example, you and I, Tom, would probably have a difficult time finding private equity. The private equity is, for example, if you have, you know somebody who wants to start a business and is going to start something and they need some venture capital or some money to start putting some dollars in. So the private equity portion is difficult. It would be easy for you and I as investors to simply start our own business that would do well, and that might qualify, but that private equity part is difficult for an individual to get into. The wealthy find it easier because there's so many small businesses that want to start up and want to start making some money and then go to a private equity firm, that type of business, or that type of thing. For example, a couple of companies that people put some private equity money into, you might have heard a few of the names. For example, Facebook. I don't know if you've ever heard that. when they first came out with the idea, well, they needed some money to get started and get going and continue to build their product and so forth. Before they even made dollar one, they had a bunch of private equity that came in. Now, theirs came as a result of Morgan Stanley coming in, but it was a Morgan Stanley's private equity business that went through, and I think they bought 18% of the company, if I'm going from memory here. But it was private investors through their private banking that went and bought it. And, Tom, you and I are going to have a difficult time doing that in a couple of different ways, One of them is usually when you start having those private equity, you have to be what's called an accredited investor, which means you have to have verifiable $250,000 per year of income and or a million net worth before you can start getting into those types of programs because they're highly volatile and very risky.
Well, I was going to ask you, what is the success rate of venture capital investments?
Boy, I don't know. If I had to take a stab at it, I would say that one out of three do well.
One out of three sounds pretty high. At least to me, I thought the failure rate would be pretty high.
One of the reasons I'm guessing one out of three is simply because the percentages that are demanded, the amount of a company that's demanded and doing well. But we have to. I guess we're going to have to watch the TV show The Shark a little bit more.
Every Facebook, there are probably 25 companies that failed and ate up the money.
Sure, I'd have to say probably one out of three. Do okay. One out of 100 become Facebook.
Yeah.
Maybe even one out of 1,000. I really don't know the numbers, but I guess what I'm trying to demonstrate is that the odds are really low that you're going to hit a home run with that, and that's one of the reasons that venture capitalists, one, demand such a high interest rate if they put the money in, and two, demand such a high percentage of the company and as well go into and start being part of the management of the company.
What about this new phenomenon where companies' projects are getting financed in small increments by people online, Jumpstarter and things like that? How does that get paid back to the investor, or does it? Is it just the person doing it on an ego trip, saying I'm going to give some money to this guy because I like what they're trying to finance?
Well, if people are just giving money to people just because they want to try to finance something, I think we should get into this, Tom. I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with the name of the site, but I've not went on.
That's just one of the examples. I mean, music, movies, even companies now are doing this. They're going online with their ideas, saying, "Here's my idea, but I don't have any money. Send me, $50, $100, $1,000, whatever the case may be, until they raise enough money to get the project off the ground." Now, I don't know how they pay that money back, or what the interest rate is to pay it back, or how that all works. But it seems like that is becoming more and more popular.
I guess it's $100 or $50 or something of that nature. I'm going to consider a donation. If I'm going to put any sort of a considerable money into it, I as an investor would want to say, well, but what am I going to get back out of this? And how am I going to get it back? And I don't know if they I'm certain somebody does, but I'm not sure how the teeth work in that, to put some teeth into it and say, okay, if the company goes, how much of the company do I own? Do I have some shares, or what type of skin in the game do I have by investing my money in this type
of like,
idea?
It's like that blues guitarist you brought in last summer. If he wanted to make a new album, but he didn't have any money, and he would come to you and say, you know, finance me $1,000, get five of your friends to kick in, and we'll record a new album, and then you'll get your name on the back of the record or something. I don't know. I don't know how the old.
Well, that's nice of the names on the back of the record, but I want to own a piece of the royalty.
All right. Okay.
And I think that's what you, you'd want to watch out for, because you're being a venture capitalist.
We should talk about this more down the line, because this is becoming more and more trendy and popular.
Perhaps this is
something
to research and take a look at.
Yeah.
And, even have our friend Alan, the attorney, come in and chat about that as well. That
all right. Well, we're out of time for this week, though. And if folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
You can give us a call at the very cold 3rd Avenue Bridge Street in Wausau, Wisconsin. Stop in and catch a cup of coffee. So hopefully find us between appointments and kick the tires and say hello and have some coffee and maybe even a couple of cookies if they make it to the front office. On that, give us a call, 715-849-3600. Toll free outside of the Wausau area at 866-355-5100 or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you again next week.
See you then, brother.
That's Merle Kelch, Kelch and Associates here in Wausau. We've got the news. The Polka Show's on the way. And don't forget Badger basketball this afternoon. Pregame show at Purdue at 3 o'clock. Badger hockey tonight as they host Ohio State. All right here on WSAU.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Badgers basketball is hot.
The Evan Strain, three in the air, right of the circle, book.
Badgers hockey is cool.
And shoots and scores. They have gone off.
Central Wisconsin's Badgers sports station, AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Saturday night, a Badgers sports doubleheader. We'll start with basketball at 3 o'clock against Purdue, followed by hockey against Ohio State at 7 on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. There's a report of four protesters killed in Cairo, Egypt, in marches against the military-run government. Fox News Radio's Lindsay Peretti's there.
Armored police trucks surrounded the square and began firing on the crowd, tear gas and what seemed like some kind of pellets or even possibly live ammunition. There was a crossfire, and everyone cleared the square within a matter of seconds. It was the fastest that I've seen a protest dispersed in 3 years. And then we saw the military and riot police coming through the square trying to arrest people and clear out any stragglers.
It's 3 years today since an uprising started that led to Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak stepping down. Mohamed Morsi was elected president after that, with the military removing him from power last summer. The first face-to-face talks in 3 years in Syria's civil war, 30 minutes of negotiators not saying a word to each other and then leaving through separate doors. A United Nations mediator did lay out some ground.